Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, text 42. Got that up there? Okay. Hare Krishna. Some very intimate detail of Srila Prabhupada's position. Did you record that? No. Some very intimate detail of Srila Prabhupada's transcendental position is revealed here in the book which is meant for mass distribution to the public that Srila Prabhupada is transcendentalist who has appeared in an elevated family as was his guru. And by the transcendental system, in other words, by the, it's not stated here, but we can understand, but by the arrangement of Krishna, Srila Prabhupada met his Srila Prabhupada. So some hint is there, even in a book for mass distribution, that there are special souls, and the author of this book, of course the original author is Krishna himself, or you might say Vyasadeva, but the author of this Bhagavad Gita as it is, he himself is in this world being specifically sent here to meet his guru, who is also sent to this world. It's not just by chance that some great souls are born in families of transcendentalists. It's by the arrangement of higher order. Actually, everyone's birth is by the arrangement of higher order. Karmana daiva netrena jantur deho papatyaye. Transcendentalists, they also under higher order, under the arrangement of the Supreme Lord and the demigods, according to their previous karma, they are placed in various bodies. Now, the pure devotees, they're also sent to certain situation within this material world, but not according to their previous karma. They're pure devotees. They're beyond the actions and reactions of material nature. That's the proper understanding. Is it not? You all know this. Then you may say that, well, this verse, Atava yoginam eva kule bhavati dhimatam, this specifically refers to yogis who do not complete their yoga practice. They don't become perfect. Yoga brashta means they're not, they actually fall from the path. And then they take birth in the heavenly planets. And then after that, Shuchinam Srimatam Gehe Yoga Brashto Bijayate. Then they take birth in the families of exalted Brahmanas or Vaishyas, where they have an opportunity to again revive their practices. So when Srila Prabhupada writes here about himself, taking birth in a family of transcendentalists, does that mean that he was a unsuccessful yogi, or he was a devotee who's trying to become successful but he didn't quite make it, and then he got born in a family of devotees and then he became perfect? Is that the proper understanding? Well, one of Srila Prabhupada's disciples asked Srila Prabhupada about that in a letter, that Tamal Krishna Goswami wanted to know about Srila Prabhupada's position. It's a strange question to ask. What is Srila Prabhupada's background? Are you a pure devotee, or are you just sadhana siddha? There's three types of siddhas. Perfect persons, perfect devotees. Nitya siddha, they're always perfect. Sadhana siddha, they become perfect largely by their own endeavors in sadhana. And kripa siddha, those who are perfect by the mercy of the perfect. Generally it's understood that Gaurangera Shangi Gane Nitya Siddha Karimane, the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they should all be considered eternally perfect devotees. And the great acharyas who appear even after the manifest pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they're also understood. It's not that there's some ordinary people who someone was born in Calcutta, then he became a businessman and he failed in his business, so he got fed up and he took sannyas, and then he had all this energy being a businessman. He's used to running around and canvassing for business, so instead he started running around and canvassing for bhakti. And in this way, due to his business skills and his inability to sit in Vrindavan and just do chanting, he had all this Rajaguna, and then he came out, and then so many people became devotees. You could analyze in such a way. You could not recommend it. We should understand that Srila Prabhupada is a perfect devotee. Otherwise, how is it possible that this Krishna consciousness, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu predicted would go all over the world, it's not going to happen just without someone who is a very great devotee? And of course, Srila Lochandas Thakur in his Chaitanya Mangal records Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as saying that my Senapati Bhakta, Senapati means a general in military terms, so my devotee who's like a general will spread this Krishna consciousness very widely. Prithivite ache jato nagaradi gram shabat prachar hoibe moranam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu predicted that my name will be spread in every town and village in this world. So that service of inaugurating the Sankirtan movement outside of India, that service was done by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. So we should never consider him to be an ordinary devotee. He's very, even among devotees, his position is unique and special. But then why is he saying that? You see, I was born in a family of transcendentalists. Various quotes Srila Prabhupada said, which I've come across. Where did Prabhupada say this? In some lecture. Let's have a look and see. Yeah, Srila Prabhupada, speaking on the Vyasa Puja Day of his own Gurudev in 1974, during his lecture, he said, talking about his own life and how he came in contact with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said, I was transferred from Calcutta to Allahabad for business concern, but I was always thinking of this sadhu, means Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. I'm giving a short history, but my life was changed. Of course, I was born in a Vaishnava family. So then you may think, well, how has his life changed? He was already born in a Vaishnava family. What changed? The Prabhupada went on to say, I was born in a Vaishnava family. Chaitanya cult was my life and soul. But due to education and bad association, or the modern association, I was declined. Now this Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur again revived my consciousness. So Prabhupada was saying that I was raised as a Vaishnava, so the Chaitanya cult is my life and soul. But due to bad association, modern education, due to education, I was declined, became away from that. Sometimes devotees say, well, Prabhupada, he also had modern education. He came out as a Vaishnava. But he himself says here that by this bad education, he himself said, I was somewhat away from that, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati revived that. In another lecture, Hindi lecture, just recently translated, my birth was in a Vaishnava family. My father was a great Vaishnava, so from birth I was in Vaishnava culture only. But just like by acquiring today's knowledge, that means modern education, most of the devotees became impersonalists. I also for some days became like that. Then my friend introduced me to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada. So in other words, Prabhupada said that due to modern education, I became like an impersonalist. How can a devotee become an impersonalist? How is it possible? Well, it is possible. The danger is there. We find in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhagavan Acharya, who was a great devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, living in Puri. His brother had gone to study in Varanasi, and he came to Puri, and Bhagavan Acharya wanted to hear, oh, my brother, he's become a great scholar. Let's listen. But it was all Mayavad. What do you expect from Varanasi? All Mayavad. So then Sarup Damodar, he chastised Bhagavan Acharya that you don't listen to that. This impersonal descriptions are so poisonous that even a great devotee can become affected. So Srila Prabhupada was saying, I became affected by impersonalism. So how is that possible? I'd mentioned that Tamal Krishna Maharaj had asked Prabhupada about his own spiritual situation, about Prabhupada's spiritual situation. Srila Prabhupada wrote, it's a very important letter, he was not asking just about Prabhupada, I haven't seen the letter from Tamal Krishna Maharaj, but asking about how do we understand the position of a spiritual master who appears in his life at some point he was not liberated. If you see Narad Muni, he was a maidservant's son. That's definitely not Shuchinam Srimatam Gehe. He was born of the maidservant. There's no record of his father. So, generally, if a maidservant has a son and there's no father known, you can understand that she does prostitution on the side. Prabhupada himself explained that the maidservants, they're from very poor families, so they do a little prostitution on the side. They can also be great devotees, Prabhupada said. I'm quoting Prabhupada. So Prabhupada, he, in this letter, he opened the letter by making the position very clear. And then he went on to explain. The first sentence in this letter, a spiritual master is always liberated. Ah. So what does that mean? If you initiate someone, then immediately you become liberated. Does that mean? What does it mean? It means that if one's actually a spiritual master, he must be on the liberated platform. Otherwise, anyone can initiate anyone. I was just listening to a discussion, Srila Prabhupada, with some of his disciples, how this so-called Guru Maharaji was very popular in America at the time. But he'd been ordered by the Indian government, you can't leave India because there's some court case going on. There's some family feud. His mother wants to demote him from being God and make his brother God instead. So this discussion, this is all nonsense. So it's not that just by claiming to be God or claiming to be a guru, one is one. So spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada writes, is always liberated. I mean, who's actually a spiritual master? Srila Prabhupada went on to write, in any condition of his life, he should not be mistaken as an ordinary human being. Which is very possible. Because in many ways, spiritual master acts as an ordinary human being. He eats, sleeps, gets sick. In the case of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he had a job, government service, at a time when in Bengal there was increasing dissatisfaction with the British government. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a loyal servant of the British government, very trustworthy and dependable. So in any condition of his life, he should not be mistaken as an ordinary human being. This position of a spiritual master is achieved by three processes. One is called sadhana siddha. That means one who is liberated by executing the regulated principles of devotional service. Another is kripa siddha, one who is liberated by the mercy of Krishna or his devotee. And another is nitya siddha, who is never forgetful of Krishna throughout his whole life. These are the three features of the perfection of life. So far as Narad Muni is concerned, so obviously, Tamal Krishna Maharaj in his letter has asked about Narad Muni, Prabhupada. How do we understand that someone, it appears that they're very ordinary persons. Srila Prabhupada, to people who met him, he would have appeared like a very ordinary person. When he was a businessman and a grihastha, people would go into his shop, they would ask for medicine, he would give them the medicine, or they would refer them to Dr. Ghosh, who was sitting. Oh, I'm feeling sick. Go see Dr. Ghosh. Then he'd come down and fill up the prescription. He was a businessman. He's doing business. How many millions of businessmen are there in India today? How many of them are Nitya Siddha Paramahamsas? Is it zero or one or two? Nowadays there are many who are practicing devotional service by the grace of Srila Prabhupada and others. It's not that bhakti is restricted within the walls of ISKCON, at least we don't see that. So, anyway, I'll go on reading the letter. So far, Narad Muni is concerned, Srila Prabhupada writes, in his previous life he was a maidservant's son. How did he become a maidservant's son? Narad Muni himself described that I was a Gandharva and I was fond of women. And in a Sankirtan festival, I was singing cinema songs. I was singing songs glorifying mundane attraction between male and female. So he got cursed. You become a Shudra's son. So far, Narad Muni is concerned, in his previous life, he was a maidservant's son. But by the mercy of the devotees, he later on became Siddha. And in the next life, he appeared as Narad, with complete freedom to move anywhere, by the grace of the Lord. So even though he was in his previous life a maidservant's son, there was no impediment in the achievement of his perfect spiritual life. Similarly, any living entity who is conditioned can achieve the perfectional stage of life by the above-mentioned processes. And the vivid example is Narad Muni. So I do not know why you have asked about my previous life, whether I was subjected to the laws of material nature. Tamal Krishna Maharaj has asked this. Prabhupada say, why are you asking? What's the point? What is to be gained by asking? So even though accepting that I was subjected to the laws of material nature, does it hamper in my becoming a spiritual master? What is your opinion? Yes, and what is your opinion? From the life of Narad Muni, it is distinct that although he was a conditioned soul in his previous life, there was no impediment of his becoming the spiritual master. This law is applicable not only to the spiritual master, but to every living entity. In other words, every living being has the potency or the possibility to become a completely pure devotee. Srila Prabhupada continues, there are thousands of examples explained in our books. By our books, we can understand Srila Prabhupada is referring to the complete corpus of the Vedic literature, that the conditioned soul is never affected with the material body. It is said in the Vedas, Asanga Ayam Purusha, which means that the living entity is always unaffected with matter. Another example is given that the reflection of the moon on water appears to be moving, but actually the moon is not moving, it is fixed up. So any living entity is like that. His reflection on the material body appears to be changing, but the spirit soul is fixed up. Therefore this movement is called illusion. The movement of the ripples on the water makes it seem as if the moon is trembling, but actually the moon is not. It's what we, if we only see the moon as reflected on the water, we'll think that the moon by nature is trembling. But actually that's because we only see the reflection, we don't see the original. That's not actually the moon. But if we don't look up and see the moon, then we'll only see the reflection and we'll think that the moon is like that. But actually the moon is not, that's not even the moon itself. It appears to be due to our poor fund of knowledge. It appears to be trembling. But one who has the proper vision, who looks up, we can look up and see the moon as it is, then he'll see the moon is not trembling. What I took to be the moon is not the moon. It's simply a reflection in the water. Yatha bhaso, yatha. What is that? Stitaha. So far, so Srila Prabhupada continues, so far I am concerned, I cannot say in my what I was in my previous life, but one great astrologer calculated that I was previously a physician and my life was sinless. Beside that, to corroborate the statement of Bhagavad Gita, Shuchinam Srimatam Gehe Yoga Brashto Bijay Sanjayate, Srila Prabhupada writes it, which means an unfinished yogi takes birth in a rich family or is born of a Shuchi or pious father. By the grace of Krishna, I got these two opportunities in the present life to be born of a pious father and brought up in one of the richest aristocratic families of Kolkata, Kashinath Malik. The Radha Krishna deity in this family called me to meet him. And therefore last time when I was in Kolkata, I stayed in that temple along with my American disciples. So Srila Prabhupada is revealing here. And when he went to Kolkata, just previous to this, he had stayed in his home area, which actually sannyasis don't do. They don't go, they might go to the city, in which they're born, but they won't go to their home. Of course, Prabhupada's wife was living elsewhere. But he went to his home. But why? Because Krishna called me. Radha Govinda wanted to, he called him, that he wanted to see Prabhupada with his Western disciples. He stayed in that temple along with my American disciples. Srila Prabhupada continues, although I had immense opportunities to indulge in the four principles of sinful life, because I was connected with a very aristocratic family, Krishna always saved me. Elsewhere, Srila Prabhupada described that among the aristocratic people of Calcutta, such a family he's born into, it was considered prestigious to keep a prostitute, to have a mistress. Courtesan would be called. It was a common thing in India. Rich men would keep a prostitute and they would have them dance and sing. And then all the aristocratic men would come. Prabhupada described that he remembered seeing this. He said it was like a bunch of dogs around a bitch. That's how he described it. So all the aristocratic members of his family, they're all thinking, oh yeah, this is very high class, to have a high class woman dancing and, well, not high class. She can't be high class if she's dancing and singing in public, but they're maintained by rich men. And this is what we do, and this is our aristocratic life. Prabhupada saw it's like a bunch of dogs surrounding a bitch. So Srila Prabhupada wasn't attracted to that. He was attracted. That's another part of their culture. They'll have the temple, they'll go to the temple in the morning, and they'll go to the prostitute at night. And it's all part of their aristocratic life. Prabhupada went to the temple. He didn't go to the prostitutes. He had ample opportunity. He said that. Immense opportunities, Prabhupada said. But Krishna always saved me. And Srila Prabhupada writes, throughout my whole life, I do not know what is illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, or gambling. He never indulged in any of these things. So far my present life is concerned, I do not remember any part of my life when I was forgetful of Krishna. So to be never forgetful of Krishna, that is the symptom of a Nitya Siddha devotee. Of course, Srila Prabhupada, he also said that by influenced by modern education, I also, and my bad association, I also became an impersonalist for some time. But then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati again revived my consciousness. So what does that mean? He never forgot Krishna at any time in his life, but for some time he was an impersonalist. Well, in this regard, we may cite that Bhavananda, who's here now, he asked Srila Prabhupada that you say that all of us, your disciples, we were sent by your Guru Maharaj and by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to assist you. But how is that? Because we were sinful, so sinful. So how is it that we were sent by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Prabhupada said, no, as soon as I came, you came to me. So that means that all that sinfulness that was superficial, because you immediately came, there's immediate attraction. So Srila Prabhupada said that was superficial. As soon as one comes in contact with the devotees, then he has an epiphany. Oh, Yes. This is what I want. This is what I need. This is my life. So these things may be somewhat difficult to understand, because obviously, if we accept Vaishnava teachings, obviously Srila Prabhupada was very special, empowered, pure devotee of Krishna. It's not expected, although Srila Prabhupada says it is possible, at least theoretically possible, that anyone sadhana siddha, he can also become a spiritual master. But generally we can understand that those who are very highly empowered, brahmanda tarite shakti dhare dhane jane jane, they are associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They can deliver the whole universe. And sadhana siddha gives the idea of someone who's struggling with the three modes of material nature, but they're very trying, and gradually become purified and overcome lust and greed and become pure devotees. Vitaraga bhaya krodha manmaya mamupashitaha bhavo jnana tapasa puta madbhava magataha. This is the description of sadhana siddhas, that they have attachments, material attachments. They're in the atmosphere of fear. They have the tendency to become angry, frustrated, which means a tendency toward impersonalism. But by engagement in devotional service, with cultivating knowledge and austerity, they became purified and they became Krishna conscious, Madbhavam, Krishna Bhava. They came to this position. So Srila Prabhupada said, I never indulge in sinful activities. What about Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur? He himself has described in his autobiography, which he said was not to be widely published, but now it is widely published, that he ate meat and fish and enjoyed that. How are we to understand? Very difficult to understand, because obviously he also is a great pure devotee. Actually, there's no difference between Nitya Siddha, Kripa Siddha, Sadhana Siddha, because by nature, the jiva is Siddha. Asango hi aham purushaha, Prabhupada quotes here. So one may be temporarily not in that position. But then again, when one comes to that position, then whatever one may have done previously, that is immaterial. Just like someone may have amnesia, so for some time they forget everything about their life, but then when they recovered, then they go on with life as normal. And the fact that he had amnesia previously, it's not very significant. You may remember, but it's nothing to blame someone for. So Prabhupada says here, it doesn't matter if someone's acting on the platform of a siddha, if he's fully Krishna conscious, then there's no need to analyze. Is he sadhana siddha? Or maybe a nitya siddha would be better. He is on the position of a nitya siddha, which means actually they are nitya siddha. And in one, it's only some differentiation is made, technical study is there. Otherwise, if one is in the position of siddha, then whether he was supposedly contaminated previously or not doesn't matter. But that doesn't mean that we should think that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a materialist or Prabhupada, he was contaminated, even though he says it himself. For some time I was something like an impersonalist. But we shouldn't think like that. But he thinks like that. He may see like that. But Krishna saved me. My guru, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he revived me. So what is the fact? What is the fact, actually? We're interested in facts here. We're not interested in some sentiments. What is the fact? The fact is that Srila Prabhupada is a Nitya Siddha, empowered representative of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who sees himself, although he doesn't preach about it, there's no point to preach about it. There's no need. Now that we're in devotional service, there's no need to go around saying that, well, previously I ate meat and I drank wine. There's no point. And there's also no use to say, well, previously I was very pious and this and that. I used to go to church. Either way, what's the point? It's wet stool or dry stool. It's not Krishna consciousness. So generally you'll find you sadhus, they don't talk about the sannyasis. They don't talk about their previous life. Prabhupada may do so to some extent, inasmuch as it's connected with devotional service. Otherwise, we're not particularly interested to know how much profit he made or how much loss he incurred in his business. That's not who, or that feature of him is not why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent him to this world. That's not our eternal savior. In one sense, you could say yes. But even though he doesn't have a material side, because he never forgets Krishna, but it may appear like that. So we don't have anything, we're not particularly interested in how he went through business losses, only as much as he tells us. He incurred some business loss. Then he saw, this is Krishna's hand, yasyaham anugrihnami harishe taddanang shanai. Tato jana, what is that? What is it? Tato is it? Ato? Tato adhanam tyajantyasya swajana dukha dukhitaya. So Krishna says, who I am very merciful to do, I take their wealth away from their gradual. Of course, in this case, as Prabhupada related, it wasn't gradual. His servant plundered the business. His trusted servant plundered the whole business and rendered, just left him with a bunch of loans and nothing. So, and then seeing him penniless, his family members become unhappy. So that's the mercy of Krishna. So Prabhupada, he saw Krishna in that. That much we can see. We don't have to investigate all the details of how his servant cheated him and how Prabhupada tried to recover the situation. There's no point in any such thing. We know him as the representative of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who came and saved us. That we know. Even all the acharyas, they may appear to have some material side, or they may appear to be performing sadhana. Srila Prabhupada said about his own guru that he went through intense austerities to found this movement. Sitting here in Mayapur, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he chanted Shatakoti That's 1,000,000,000, 1,000,000,000 holy names over a period of 9 years. That's mostly what he did. He chanted. Sat here and chanted. He was feeling discouraged from so many sahajiyas. He was trying to preach. He had the message of the truth, but people weren't interested. Not only were they not interested, they were trying to suppress him. He didn't find any way to go forward. So he sat in Mayapur and chanted in a little cottage which he built by himself with a thatched roof which would be very hot in summer. Now we have all these fans because it's hot. Actually, by Krishna's mercy, it's not very hot. We expected it to be much hotter, but rain is coming at night, so it's otherwise it should be much hotter. For you coming from Salem, it's maybe a bit of a relief. It's much hotter there, huh? So we have all these fans and big building and relief. Not for him. In the summer it was hot, in the rainy season, wet, he'd have an umbrella and sit under the umbrella because the roof would leak. He'd eat once a day. In the winter it was cold, he'd go on chanting, 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 chanting. So what is there for him to do now? He feels, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has passed away. My own guru has passed away. I wanted to preach, but there's no one listening, so Bhaktivinoda Thakur told me to be in the yoga pit, so I'll be, and what to do? No one comes here, so I'll chant, that's all. What is there? He just chant, go on chanting. So Prabhupada said he went through much austerity to establish this movement. Does that mean that he didn't have the power to do it? And by chanting and undertaking that austerity, he got the power to preach. Is it like that? Pranachija, shihitu prachar, who has got life, he can preach. So did he get life by doing that chanting? Was it that he was incapable previously? He couldn't do anything. He himself felt hopeless. He couldn't do anything. Then he chanted. Then he got power. Is that what happened? He didn't want to leave Mayapur, but you know, Thakur told him to stay there. But his disciple, some people came to him, they became his disciples, just a few people. Kunjada, Kunjabihari said, you come to Calcutta. And practically, as the story goes, he practically had to be dragged to Calcutta. You come and speak here, then I'll bring so many people to hear you. Then I'll chant, I'll sit here. So Kunja had to practically pull him, and then he brought people to hear him, and then the preaching began in Calcutta, and gradually it expanded. Of course, he must have been doing some preaching, otherwise how did he have disciples? So actually, anyone who came, some people would come to the yoga pit, they'd come to visit Navadvip, and they'd come to visit the place that Bhaktivinoda Thakur had established. At that time, the Jogpit, that temple there, it wasn't a big arrangement. Like that was built by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that big temple. And later on, the covered area in front of the temple, that was actually built by Prabhupada, ISKCON, actually Bhaktivedanta Swami Charity Trust. And then all those buildings. No, there was just a little temple in a little hut. That's a little pukka building, but small building was there. So some people used to come, and Saraswati Thakur would preach to them. And typically, if he found someone interested, he would speak to them for hours and hours. Whoever was willing to listen. And some people were impressed at his speaking. They became his disciples. There were just a handful, few, were there. practically the names are there, four or five, became his disciples. And then one of them pulled him to Calcutta. So he had life to preach. He was brought to Calcutta. He took sannyas after being in Calcutta for some time. Here in Mayapur, he took sannyas from a picture of his Diksha Guru. Unusual. Then he had the idea, taking sannyas. Why did he take sannyas? He's already fully absorbed in chanting the holy names. He's already making disciples. He took sannyas to preach. There's no need for him to take sannyas. It wasn't that he was going from... he was taking sannyas so that he could practice being more renounced. You couldn't be more renounced than he was. No one can do what he was doing. Just eating some... When we say rice, we think of some nice white rice special, but they're just the local rice, the big fat rice, which only the village people, that kind of rice he was in. They're all this special rice, that's for the city people. He himself was a city person, but he came and lived in Mayapur. And you can imagine there'd be so many snakes there and scorpions, and no pujaris would stay. He'd have to pay a pujari. He couldn't do the puja himself. Bhaktivinoda Thakur made the system. Only brahmanas, that's the system, that's the caste brahmana will do. So you have to pay someone, no one will stay even by paying them. What will they do sitting in Mayapur? There's nothing to do except be Krishna conscious. There's no big festivals, they're just doing the aratis. They'd all run away one by one after stealing whatever little money was given as pranami. So it's a very difficult situation for him. In so many ways, no one could imagine. And he took sannyas for preaching. And for preaching, he gradually got big buildings and motor cars and meeting with all aristocratic people. And people said that he was better off before he took sannyas. Sannyas is supposed to be for renunciation, but he was more renounced before. But actually, there's no difference before or after. In his own consciousness, just like Srila Prabhupada was a businessman in Allahabad, and later he became the world famous Acharya. Internally he was the same person, he was completely surrendered to Guru and Krishna. But certain things manifested in his life at different times. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he took sannyas for the same reason that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas. So that people would listen to him, they'd give some importance to what he had to say. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was just like a Vaishnava, despised Vaishnava. These Babajis, they were despised by the aristocratic class as being lechers, lumpat, womanizers. Very despicable, lowest class of people. And actually they were mostly from the lowest classes. But sannyas was respected in Bengal. Why? Because of the Ramakrishna mission. Their sannyasis especially. They were highly respected. All from high class families, well educated. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur took sannyas. People would listen to him. He has something to say. He took sannyas for that reason. And then he made a situation in which aristocratic, educated people would listen. He knew they weren't going to come and sit in some little hut in a field. So he had a house in Calcutta with furniture. Again, sannyasis don't use furniture. They may sit on a wooden seat this high. You've seen the Madhva sannyasi? They have a seat this high. Little wooden seat, that's it. That's what they sit on. That's their furniture. That's the total extent of their furniture. They don't sleep on beds. This is all sense gratification. Bed in Bengal. Now, previously that would be, you have a few pieces of wood and you hammer them together and that's a bed. Not that it's all fancy and polished, just some rough wood and that's a bed. It's quite practical in the rainy season because you're less likely to get bitten by a snake who crawls into your house. So it has some practical use also. But sannyasis don't sleep on beds. So he took sannyas, and it was unorthodox in so many ways. How did he get the inspiration? What happened? He chanted so many rounds of the Hare Krishna mantra over and over and over again, and at the end of it he got the inspiration to go in motor cars, to go to the big city, to mix with materialistic people. What happened? How did he get this wrong idea to become so materialistic and build a big institution? You may say, why didn't he just remain as a simple sadhu and remain in Mayapur? That's the perfection of life. Well, he did all these, he took sannyas and engaged with the world. That was the result of his chanting. Result, you have to be very careful when we use this word, result, because generally the word result is used in terms, people, they do some religious vow and they expect some result. I'll follow Ekadashi Vrata for 1 year and then I'll get such and such. Putrada Ekadashi. I didn't have any children, let me observe this Ekadashi, then I'll get at least one son. S-O-N. I'll get some offspring. Or I want moksha. Alright, I already had my sons and I don't like them and they don't like me. So now I'll follow Mokshada Ekadashi and get liberated from all this. You expect some result. So there is a result in devotional service also. But the result is prema-phal. And that result is completely different, because when one gets that result, then one no longer wants any other result. It's something not exactly to attain, because nitya siddha krishna prema shadha kabunai shravanadi shuddha chitta kariyayodai. It's already there. In one sense, we don't become Krishna conscious. It's a manner of speaking, but it is revived by the process of hearing and chanting about Krishna. Of course, this is a very controversial point. Can be a controversial point. But I won't discuss that now. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he chanted and he was empowered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to preach Krishna consciousness. Does that mean if he hadn't done that chanting, he wouldn't have had the empowerment to do that? Is it that by chanting he got the empowerment? In one sense you can say yes. In another sense, he is already nitya-siddha. If we want to get power to preach, we can follow in the footsteps of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and very seriously chant for some time. If we're feeling discouraged in preaching, it may happen. We can take some time out to very seriously chant and pray for the mercy to fulfill the mission, play our part in fulfilling the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by preaching Krishna consciousness. So that chanting is praying for mercy. It's not that now I chanted so many rounds and I'm building up my power. It's not like that. It's praying for mercy. The mercy comes. Mercy comes down. Not that by my endeavor, I chanted so many rounds, I did so much austerity, now I got the power to go and preach and take over the world and make sure my name's in that list of acharyas. with such an attitude, one might be able to preach, but that preaching will be contaminated by personal desire. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was chanting, he came out, he preached, he's a pure devotee. We can also follow in his footsteps by chanting the holy names and praying for mercy to preach. But even if superficially it appears that we're preaching very well, we shouldn't think, oh, that means, I'm just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. I'm doing my chanting and I'm getting the mercy. And yet another sense, we shouldn't deny. If we are getting mercy, we shouldn't say, in one sense we should recognize, yes, some mercy is come. We shouldn't deny the mercy, that no, my guru is not merciful. He's merciful. If you say he's merciful, then something is manifesting through your efforts. But again, we have to see, it's his mercy, it's not my effort. It's a whole matter of perspective, of attitude. Looking back, we can say that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he got power to preach by that chanting in a mood of helplessness. But at the time, what was he thinking? Was he thinking, now I'm going to chant in a mood of helplessness, and I'm going to be empowered, and I'm going to go out and found 64 Gauriya Mathas and establish the teachings of Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the world. I'm going to fulfill the desire of my guru. Was he thinking like that? Did he know what would happen in future? Or was he, as he himself said, he was chanting, feeling helpless, hopeless. But he became hopeful after he had a vision of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and all his associates and all the previous acharyas and his own gurus, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, telling him, go and preach, don't be disappointed. He was feeling disappointed. Now you go and preach, we're with you. So then he became inspired to go out and preach. When he was chanting, he was feeling hopeless and helpless. But he was, so from one perspective we can see, he's sent to this world. Bhaktivinoda Thakur prayed that some representative of yourself, ray of Vishnu, he's praying to Jagannath, to Krishna, send some representative to carry forward this movement. That person was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. But from his own perspective, he was feeling hopeless, helpless, chanting in helplessness. When we look back, we can see what we may not see at the time. So many people, I was in Allahabad, just in November 1977. No, it's October 77. I was with our devotees distributing Srila Prabhupada's books there. And several people I met, they said, oh yes, I knew your guru before he went to the West. Several people told me that actually I advised him to go to the West and preach. Maybe they did, although it's very unlikely. Maybe they did, but it was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur who inspired him to go there. And at the time when he was a businessman in Allahabad, was he a businessman in Allahabad? My guru is a businessman in Allahabad. And my guru is an eternal servant of Krishna in the spiritual world. He's not a businessman in Allahabad. So we may say he was manifesting that activity, but that's being a businessman in Allahabad has got nothing to do with being a guru. There are so many, even today there must be thousands and thousands of businessmen in Allahabad, from someone who walks around the streets selling samosas or to someone who has some big factory. Or there are so many. But that's nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. Circumstantially, Prabhupada was in that situation. You may say also that's Krishna's arrangement to show that we may be in material life and we can practice Krishna consciousness even although apparently in material life, and we can get the mercy of the pure devotees. So Prabhupada saw himself like that, that I was doing this business, and then I met the devotees and they brought me to the, they were founding a Gauriya Math there, and then he took initiation. So from Prabhupada's perspective, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur saved him, revived his Krishna consciousness. On the other hand, he's sent by Krishna. When we look back, we can see it's all a pastime of Krishna to arrange all of this. But from Prabhupada's own perspective at that time, he had been influenced by bad association. And he was away from Krishna consciousness. Actually, when he was in Allahabad, he'd already met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So from 1922, when he met him, his whole outlook changed to again become purely, solely focused on Krishna consciousness. But for some time, he went through a period where it seemed his Krishna consciousness wasn't very strong. He felt like that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, more grossly. What about Bhima? Does he all, Bhima of the Pandavas? He's pure devotee of Krishna. He vowed to drink the blood of Dushasana's heart. And he did. What happens when you become a pure devotee? Oh, you rip someone's heart out and drink the blood. Is it? It's not very typical of a pure devotee. Of course, he showed the... Don't do Vaishnava aparad. That's what can happen to you. Devotees can become so angry. Draupadi would go to Bhima when she needed something, because she knew he will do it. Was he a henpecked husband? He would do whatever the wife wanted. No. She's a pure devotee. He's a pure devotee. He's ripping out the heart of Dushasana and apparently drinking the blood is a manifestation of his great pure devotion, not to be imitated. He feels. He doesn't say, an imposter to say, well, Draupadi was insulted. Anyway, it's all Maya. So, what is it, man? Why did I get married anyway? I'll take sannyas. He did, as Madhvacharya. But he's not so detached. He's not so detached that he'll sit and watch the pure devotees being insulted. Actually, of course, Bhima had to sit. That is Bhima's self-control. That on the order of Yudhishthira, he just sat while that was going on. Otherwise, he would have personally, at that point, killed Duryodhana and all his brothers. But then there would have been no Kurukshetra war. The idea was to kill a whole bunch of people all at once. So Krishna just, he kept it. Let Bhima... It wasn't that... Usually someone becomes angry and they cool down a bit. But with Bhima, it was... For 13 years, his anger was building up more and more and more. It didn't go down. who's just waiting, who's just... who's just thinking, when am I going to catch Dusharsan? That was his whole meditation. That was his devotional service. And even so many times, Arjuna and they would, on the battlefield, they'd meet the brothers, especially Arjuna, would meet the brothers of Duryodhana and completely defeat them and let them go. He said, I'm not going to kill you. Bhima is going to kill you. I'm leaving you for him. So Bhima took that vow. So that's his pure devotion. What happened? Then he took birth later on as Madhva. And then he was a very good sannyasi. Then he was very peaceful and not all this killing and passion and kshatriya and nasty. No, that's a wrong understanding. Bhima's apparent gross desire to kill all the Dhatarashtra, that is pure devotion, not to be imitated. It's not that he became pure later on as Madhva. He's completely right. Hanuman, he burned all of Lanka. So many children, women, they were innocent. Burned them all. Celebrated up to the present day. Again, this is not to be imitated, especially in Kali Yuga. Chanting Hare Krishna, that is the yoga dharma. We're not meant for, of course it may be in future, but in particular this time, we're not meant for fighting and killing. That is part of human life, it may be, but at least we as followers of Srila Prabhupada, we're not meant for killing. We should kill the bad propensities by spreading the Sankirtan movement. So how do we see the pure devotees? How do we understand this? Well, maybe we don't try too much to understand. Just we understand they're pure devotees of Krishna. They have various services to do. In the service of Krishna, it's not stereotyped. Some have what may seem to be not like devotional service. Advaishta sarva-bhutanam maitra karuna eva charte. Krishna told Arjuna, pure devotees are very dear to me. They're not envious of anyone. They're friendly to all. Bhima's not going to listen to this. He said, well, okay, but I'm still going to kill all the sons of Dhritarashtra. I'm not going to be friendly to them. That's my friendliness. I'm going to kill every single one of them. And specifically, I'm going to rip out Dushasana's heart and drink the blood. He made a vow. So what's going on here? What's going on? Is pure devotion? Someone's a pure devotee? Or they're not a pure devotee? How are you a pure devotee or not a pure devotee? Are you in Maya or you're not in Maya? The pure devotees, they're Bhaktivinoda Thakur, appear to be like materialistic. Is it pure devotee or not a pure devotee? Krishna knows, we see, the devotee himself may not see. When Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that he's overcome by lust, he's not just right, I'm pretending this, but actually it's not true. I'm just saying it. He feels. So what is that lust? Is it real or is it not real? It's an arrangement of Krishna. It's not really lust. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, presumably he experienced it. It's just like impersonalists and Buddhists. They say, well, nothing's real. So they, what's the philosophical reply to that? Kick them in the face with boots. That's the philosophical reply. So they can say it's not real, but it damn well hurts. So you can say, well, it's painful, but it's an illusion. Well, you may say it's an illusion, but you experience it. There's a difference between not being kicked in the face boots with boots illusion and being kicked in the face boots illusion. One doesn't hurt, and the other one hurts. It's actually experience. So, although in one sense you may say everything in this world is an illusion, but pain is experience. So, therefore, all real philosophy begins with understanding that we're in a position of suffering, how to get free from it. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he says, that I'm overcome and attached to my family members, I'm in lust. We can understand that he experiences that. But at the same time, we understand he's not a materialistic, lusty person. It's something just arranged by Krishna. Why would Krishna arrange that? Why would Krishna arrange for Narad Muni to be the son of a maidservant? Why does Krishna do such things? Why did Krishna arrange for Srila Prabhupada to apparently be an attached grihastha? Why didn't he just come down from Vaikuntha on an airplane? And then so many more people would have been following him. Krishna has his way of doing things. He sends people to this world as his representatives, and in many ways they may appear to be like people of this world. But we are one. Vaishnava Kriya Mudra Bigeho Nabhuja. Don't judge a Vaishnava as being an ordinary person. Now this becomes a sensitive topic. Srila Prabhupada wrote, I just quoted that, the spiritual master is always liberated. So does that mean that someone's initiating and they're also having sex with their disciples? But is it just Leela? You have to discriminate also. That's a test. Four regulated principles. Someone who's not following this can't be accepted as a spiritual master, as a pure devotee. So these are all very subtle points. We have a spiritual master might seem to be in so many ways like an ordinary person. We are warned by Krishna himself, Acharyam Maham Vijaniyam Navaman Yeta Karahichi Namarita Bhudya Suyeta Sarvadeva Mayoguru. Do not think of him as an ordinary person. Don't be envious of him. Take him to understand him to be me. Krishna has appeared. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that about his Diksha Guru. Krishna appeared before me in the form of my Diksha Guru. Don't think of him as an ordinary person. As Srila Prabhupada said to his own disciples, some of you in future, you will also have to take this role of initiating. So I can say to all of you here, at least some of you here, you'll also have to do that. So now you're listening, Acharyam Maham Vijaniyam, and you may be thinking, oh yeah, that's right. I shouldn't be envious of the Acharya. But what if you are the Acharya? How do you see this verse? What do you think? You think, yeah, I remember that. But you have to teach that also to your disciples. And what is the meaning of that? But yeah, you know, I still struggle with my rounds and I don't feel very liberated. What should I do? go and sit in Mayapur for 9 years and chant non-stop. But then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's order comes into cyclic succession. Jare Deko Tare Koha Krishna Upadesh. We have to go out and preach. So, what shall I do? And how should your disciples see you? Should they see you as, I remember him, yeah, now he's a guru, but I know what he was like before. So, your disciple, you know, but I know actually, he's just an ordinary person. But in our Vaishnava culture, no one will say like that. They know this principle. Who is initiating, they give special respect for performing that service. Guru is always to be seen as good as Krishna. From his own perspective, what is his own perspective? Jagai madhai hoite muise papishta purishe kita hoite muise logishta jemara nam sune tara punna khoi jemaranam loi tar papa hoi. Krishnadas Kaviraj, who's the medium through which the ecstatic frame of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, some drops of it, as he himself said, have been captured for the benefit of the world. He is that person through whom Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy manifested as Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita and Govinda Lilamrita. He said, I am more sinful than Jagai and Madhai, lower than a worm in stool. Anyone who hears my name loses all their pious credit. Anyone who says my name becomes sinful by doing so. This is impossible to understand. There's a story of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. It's not in my book. He used to walk up and down this road in the evenings with his disciples. And one old man used to regularly yell at him whenever he walked past. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati never paid any attention to him. And his disciples, they were very angry at this man. And they wanted to shut him up. Saraswati Thakur, just leave him, let him go. Then, as old men do, that old man died. And the disciples came and they were saying, oh, he died, very good. And he had Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Not happy, he said, oh. Now there's no one to yell at me. There's no one to tell me what a fool I am. There's no one to deflate my false pride. So he was welcoming that person. He was all the time surrounded by this people praising him. So he appreciated that person. He's actually, from his own perspective, that person is actually describing his real character. So, how are we to understand these things? The devotees themselves feel themselves to be very fallen. Can we deny that? They have that experience. From our perspective, they're completely pure devotees. So what is true? What is the fact? The fact is that they're completely pure devotees. If you ask Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself, they say the fact is that I'm a very sinful person. So what is correct? How can you say Bhaktivinoda Thakur? Of course Bhaktivinoda Thakur also says, Amitushanam the Shukata Bhashi. Radhika Madhava Charana Dasi. I'm a resident of
Swananda Sugata Kunj. I'm a servant at the lotus feet of Radha and Madhava. So he also says that. So we will see, we'll emphasize that. That's what we see. But he himself sees. Different things. How can he be materialistic and be an eternal servant of Krishna? What can we say? Vaishnavara, Kriyamudra Bigehana, but it's impossible to understand. They actually think like that. We may actually be like that. Probably most of us here are like that. But one point we can take from all of this, what is understood by this, that they undertook a process of purification. They felt that I need purification. They didn't feel, I'm a Nitya Siddha, so I'll just put my feet up and watch TV, and whenever Krishna's ready, I'll manifest pastimes of pure devotion. Now, they went through a process of what they consider to be purification. So, we are not Nitya Siddha. There may be, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said once, if there's anyone present here who's a Nitya Siddha, please inform me. I didn't notice, but if there is anyone here, please inform me, and then I'll instruct you in your internal pastimes with Krishna. But so far I didn't see anyone. You might be. So, at the same time, there's no obstruction, as Prabhupada in this letter he says. You can become perfect. Although, if the pure devotees who come from the spiritual world to pick us up, if they can't do it, then what's the point of them coming? If we can't become pure devotees or revive our pure devotion, then why are they coming? What are they doing? Just, what's the point? So it can be there, it is there. But what we have to go through, what intense purification, what intense absorption we have to go through. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given a very easy process, but it's not a cheap process. And the great devotees, they demonstrate that. It's not something cheap, that you do a little maya on the side and little bhakti here and there. It's not going to happen. It may happen after many, many lifetimes. But if we want to take the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu now, then we have to apply ourselves to the process. This much we can understand. From the pure devotee's own perspective, they had to go through so many things, so much purification. They had to take the mercy of their acharyas. They had to go through so many difficulties and get so many realizations. That is their perspective. We shouldn't just discount that and say, oh, anyway, they're pure devotees. That's just their leela. They personally experienced that. Hare Krishna. I'm over time. Yes. So I'll finish it. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.